Russian mobster Felix Sater. Would those be in the Trump Organization's files?
They'd be in the Trump Organization's files. They would be CCs to Bayrock, which was the name of Mr. Sater's company. I suspect on Mr. Sater's email address, possibly hard files in possession of Mr. Sater.
And when you say in possession of the Trump Organization, where?
It depends.
Organization, where?
On it now, it would probably be in a box off-site. They have storage facility that they put old files.
In addition to convicted Russian mobster Sater, do you know of any other ties to convicted or alleged mobsters President Trump may have?
I am not aware.
Is it true that many people with ties to Russia ultimately bought condos in Trump properties, usually for cash? And if so, how many are we talking? 10, 20? 50.
I'm not, honestly, sir, I'm not aware of any. The statement that was you're referring to, I believe, was made by either Eric or Don, and I don't agree with it.
So are you aware of any cash purchases by Russian oligarchs and family members of Trump properties?
I'm not aware of that. I can tell you, when you say cash, if you mean walking in with a satchel of rubles, the answer is I've never seen that happen. I've never heard of it. I will tell you, when we sold Mr. Trump's property in Palm Beach, the home for $95 million, it came in by wire. And that came from Mr. Rebolovyev's bank account.
One other question. You also talked about President Trump doing negotiations throughout the campaign regarding the Trump Tower in Moscow. Was he directly involved in those negotiations? And if so, how do you know?
Well, the answer is yes. And as it relates to negotiations, it was merely follow-ups as to what's currently happening, what's happening with Russia, meaning he wanted me to give him a status report. The problem with this is that the project never advanced because they were unable, Mr. Sater was unable to provide me with proof that somebody owned or controlled a piece of property that we can actually build on.
The gentleman's time has expired. Thank you. Mr. Marsh.
Mr. Cohen. This is live coverage from NPR News of Michael Cohen's testimony. Here's Justin Amash, Republican of Michigan.
Why did he trust you with the various tasks that you performed for him?
I don't know, sir. You would have to ask him that question.
Well, we've heard here that you have bad character. You've admitted to that over the years. You have no idea why he chose to hire you.
In 2006, I was asked by Don Jr. to come meet with his father. I did. He then followed up by asking if I would take a look at an issue that was occurring at Trump World Tower with the board. I went ahead and I looked into it, and I found that the statements that the board were making about Mr. Trump were inaccurate. And the reason Don came to me is because I had an apartment there for investment. My parents had an apartment there. My in-laws lived there. Friends of mine, we all bought as a big block from a brokerage company. We got a good price on each unit. And we ultimately turned over the board, and I became actually the treasurer of the board because the out-of-control spending was going to put the building into bankruptcy. And I was proud to say that within a year, we had plus $1 million versus minus $1.3 million. At the end of the day, Mr. Trump appreciated that, and he tasked me with something else. It was to handle a problem that Don Jr. had created in terms of a business, a license deal. And we resolved that. And then on top of that, the third time, Mr. Trump had asked me to take a look at the third Trump Entertainment Resort Chapter 11 reorganization, because he had a series of questions that he wanted answered. And I read these two stack books, gave him the answers that he needed. And with that, the next time I was sitting in his office, and he asked me if I was happy at the sleepy old firm that I was with. I said, yes. He said, would you rather work for me? And I asked, if you offer me a job? And he said, yeah. And we negotiated, and I actually never went back to my office.
All right. You suggested that the president sometimes communicates his wishes indirectly. For example, you said, quote, Mr. Trump did not directly tell me to lie to Congress. That's not how he operates, end quote. Can you explain how he does this?
Sure. It would be no different if I said, that's the nicest looking tie I've ever seen, isn't it? What are you going to do? You're going to fight with him? The answer is no. So you say, yeah, it's the nicest looking tie I've ever seen. That's how he speaks. He doesn't give you questions. He doesn't give you orders. He speaks in a code. And I understand the code because I've been around him for a decade.
And it's your impression that others who work for him understand the code as well?
Most people, yes.
Mr. Cohen, I don't know whether we should believe you today, but I'm going to ask you this one last question. What is the truth that you know President Trump fears most?
That's a tough question, sir. I don't have an answer for that one. What does he fear most?
What's the truth that he fears most? From your perspective. And again, I don't know whether we should believe you here today, but...
You know, it's a tough question, sir. I don't know even how to answer that question.
Let me ask you this. What principles have you chosen to follow in your life? And do you wish to follow different principles now?
I've always tried to be a good person. I've tried to be a great friend. There were many, I think over 40 statements written in my support to the sentencing judge. I have friends who I treat incredibly well that I know for over 40 years, and I treat people after 40 minutes the same exact way. Am I perfect? No. Do I make mistakes? Yes. Have I made mistakes? Absolutely. I'm going to pay the consequences for it, but all I would like to do is be able to get my life back to protect my wife and my children, support and grow old. That's pretty much where I'd like to be.
And you feel you're following a different set of principles now than you followed throughout your life.
I do, and I'm trying. I'm trying very hard. I thank you for your questions. Some of the other ones are really make it difficult to try to, you know, show some redemption. But you know, I am trying. I am trying.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Hill.
Katie Hill of California, Chairman. Democrat.
I want to mention really quick a clarification on the truth and testimony form. The mention was around whether it talks about foreign entities at all. And the question is, in fact, whether witnesses have any contracts or payments originating with a foreign government. It does not cover all foreign entities, just foreign government entities. So, Mr. Cohen, what I'd like you to ask you to do is review this issue over lunch with your attorneys. And if you need to amend your form, we ask that you do that before the conclusion of today's hearing. Also, I represent a purple district. I did not come here for partisan bickering. In fact, I actively wanted to avoid it. So when I ask these questions today, it is not as someone who has a vendetta against the president. It's as someone who comes from generations of service members who swore an oath to obey the orders of the President of the United States, and who, along with myself and every single other person up here, swore to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States. My forefathers served their country, they served their commander-in-chief, and they served the idea that America is free and just, and that the law of the land rules us all, especially those in the highest levels of our government. So I ask these questions to help determine whether our very own president committed felony crimes while serving in the Oval Office, including efforts to conceal payments that were intended to mislead the public and influence the outcome of an election. I hope to God that is not the case. So, Mr. Cohen, on January 22nd, 2018, just days after the Wall Street Journal broke the story that Mr. Cohen paid $130,000 to Stephanie Clifford to silence her during the 2016 presidential campaign, a nonprofit watchdog called Common Cause to file a complaint with the called Common Cause filed a complaint with the Department of Justice and FEC alleging the payment to Ms. Clifford may have represented an illegal in-kind contribution to the Trump campaign. I ask that their complaint be entered into the record. On February 13th, 2018, Mr. Cohen, you sent a statement to the reporters that said, quote, I used my own personal funds to facilitate a payment of $130,000 to Ms. Stephanie Clifford, and neither the Trump Organization nor the Trump campaign was party to the transaction with Ms. Clifford, and neither reimbursed me for the payment, either directly or indirectly. Was the statement false?
The statement is not false. I purposefully left out Mr. Trump individually from that statement.
Okay. Why did you say it that way?
Because that's what was discussed to do between myself, Mr. Trump, and Alan Weisselberg.
So it was carefully worded?
Yes, ma'am.
Great. Mr. Cohen, a reporter for the magazine Vanity Fair has reported that she interviewed you the very next day on February 14th, 2018, about the payment and reimbursement. And she wrote, quote, last February 14th, I interviewed Cohen in his office about the statement he gave the FEC in which he said Trump didn't know about the Stormy payment or reimburse him for it. Do you recall this meeting with the reporter?
I do.
The reporter also wrote, Trump called while I was there. I couldn't hear much, but he wanted to go over what the public messaging would be. Is that accurate?
It is.
Did the president call you while you were having a meeting with the reporter?
Yes.
Did the president call you to coordinate on public messaging about the payments to Ms. Clifford's in or around February 2018?
Yes.
What did the president ask or suggest that you say about the payments or reimbursements?
He was not knowledgeable of these reimbursements, and he wasn't knowledgeable of my actions.
He asked you to say that?
Yes, ma'am.
Great. In addition to the personal check for $35,000 in July 2017, is there additional corroborating evidence that Mr. Trump, while a sitting president of the United States, directly reimbursed you hush money as part of a criminal scheme to violate campaign finance laws?
There are 11 checks that I received for the year. The reason why 11, because as I stated before, one had two checks.
And you have copies of all of those?
I can get copies. I'd have to go to the bank.
So we will be able to get copies of all 11 checks that Mr. Trump provided to you as part of this criminal scheme.
It's either from his personal account, as what was demonstrated in the exhibit, or...
You're listening to WMNF's live coverage of the House Oversight and Reform Committee's hearing, featuring the testimony of Mr. Donald Trump's ex-lawyer, Michael Cohen. This is WMNF 88.5 FM.
Testimony on Capitol Hill. This is Bob Gibbs, Republican of Ohio.
Sometimes your answers, you're either competent or are a liar. I think maybe I could be a better attorney. I don't know. I'm looking through this. You come in here and you rail on the President of the United States, Commander-in-Chief, while he's over in, across the Pacific Ocean trying to negotiate a deal to make this world safer. And Mr. Chairman, that's just having this committee at this time when the Commander-in-Chief's out of the country is just I think it's a new president. But you could call him a racist, a cheat, you're attacking his character. And I've been with the president a little bit, I didn't see that in the president. I see a president who's very sincere. He's trying to make this country better for every American. And for you to come in here and do that, this is repentance on your part. It's really unbelievable. Real repentance would be go serve your time and don't come back here and make allegations towards a man that you can't substantiate. Now, I'm looking here from the remarks from the prosecutor in the Southern District of New York. False statements to Bank 3, which Cohen pleaded guilty, was far from an isolated event. It was one of a long series of self-serving lies Cohen told to numerous financial institutions. Earlier in your testimony, I think I heard you say that only there was a home equity loan, but apparently the prosecutors in New York think that there's other financial things that you did. He also, they said, managed to commit a series of crimes, all withholding himself out as a licensed attorney and upstanding member of the bar. Also, the Southern District prosecutors said wrote that your consciousness of wrongdoing is fleeting, that your remorse is minimal, and that your instinct is to blame others is strong. So I'm kind of left here. Why? You worked for the president for 10 years before he was president. If you have any sense of integrity that you're trying to tell us you have now, and it was that bad, why didn't you leave? You weren't stuck there for financial reasons. You had ways to leave. You were an attorney. And so that just kind of, president's working tirelessly, and you come to make these allegations, and you could have left any time you want. It looks like to me you're trying to save face. And with the other questions that came out here was, looks like to me you're going to have a very lucrative deal at some point in your life, because you don't look like you're any close to retirement, but you're going to have some type of a lucrative deal. And so one of my questions is, and it's come up a little bit, talks with you and your attorney, and there's been talks about members of Congress and staff, and you said there was some discussions. Was any of those discussions that you or your attorneys had with members of Congress or staff or prosecutors to get considerations to favor or other considerations to you or your family in the future?
No. The conversations were about the topics, and because there were things that originally we could not speak about at the request of whether it was the special counsel's office or the Southern District or any of the other agencies, including the House Select Intel or the Senate Select Intel. Sir, just for your personal edification here, I was asked to come here. Your chairman sent a letter to Mr. Davis, and I accepted, so I'm here voluntarily. And
oh, I understand
you,
that. Sir,
and if you believe that I'm here...
I understand. I think this is political theater.
Sir, if you believe...
So I'm going to quickly break in for just a moment to let you know that we have a call from a listener who says that the Howard Franklin Bridge northbound, which is coming into Tampa, is a traffic jam. So if you're on your way into Tampa, you may want to take another route.
Feel good about what's going on here. And as far as saving face, I'm not sure how being in front of the world, being called
well, this world today, with these lucrative book deals and movies that come about, I think you'll be pretty good in about 5 years. I yield the rest of my time to the chairman, ranking member.
It's not political.
I thank the gentleman for yielding. Earlier, you said you started the campaign.
That's correct. In 2011,
him for a short
Jim Jordan, the ranking member, Republican.
I certainly did, sir.
Now that's news.
ShouldTrumpRun.com.
Wow.
2011 was my idea. I saw a document in the newspaper that said, "Who would you vote for in 2012?" 6% of the people said
Michael Cohen.
6% of the people turned around and said they'd vote for Donald Trump.
The reason Donald Trump is president is because
Michael Cohen. So I brought it into his office and I said to him, "Mr. Trump, take a look at this." And he goes, "Well, wouldn't that be great?" And with that is where it all started.
Yeah. Okay. Like I'm sure he had never thought of anything like that until you came.
No, I didn't.
Let me ask you one question. I got eight seconds. What did you talk to Mr. Schiff about?
I spoke to Mr. Schiff about topics that were going to be raised at the upcoming hearing.
Whoa. Not just what time to show up, actually what you're going to talk about?
The gentleman time to expire.
Wow.
Mr. Sarbanes.
This is special coverage from NPR News. Here's John Sarbanes, Democrat of Maryland.
Cohen. I know the other side is suggesting that you are a incorrigible liar and that you're lying here today. I can't think of anything you have to gain at this point from lying. I mean, they talk about book deals and other things that you want to do, but I see a lot more that you could lose by telling the truth today, given the threats and other things that have been made against you and your family. So that's how I'm interpreting it. And of course, you brought documents with you as well to bolster the credibility of your testimony. I did want to go back to an earlier line of questioning regarding the preparation of your testimony before you came before the Intelligence Committee. You've talked about a meeting at the White House where the testimony was being reviewed. I think you said that there was at least one White House attorney, Jay Sekulow, who was there, and you acknowledged that there were some edits that were made to your testimony. So on that topic, who at the White House reviewed your testimony?
I don't know the answer to that. The document was originally created by myself, along with my attorney at the time, from McDermott, Will, and Emery, and there was a joint defense agreement, so the document circulated around. I believe it was also reviewed by Abby Lowell, who represents Ivanka and Jared Kushner.
Why did you provide the testimony to the White House?
It was pursuant to the Joint Defense Agreement that we were all operating under. Mm-hmm.
What were the edits that came back substantively on the testimony?
I'm sorry, I don't know, sir. I'd have to take a look at the document.
Did you have a reaction to why there might not have been, in a sense, a protest to what was going to be false testimony that was going to be provided?
No, sir, because the goal was to stay on message. It's just limit the relationship whatsoever with Russia. It was short. There's no Russian contacts. There's no Russian collusion. There's no Russian deals. That's the message. That's the same message that existed well before my need to come and testify.
So it's an example of where this idea, this mentality of you toe the line, whatever the storyline or the narrative of the day or the month or the year is going to be, you toe that line, whether it results in false testimony or not.
I towed the party line, and I'm now suffering, and I'm going to continue to suffer for a while, along with my family, as a result of it, so yes.
Let me switch gears quickly before my time expires. And you may not have direct knowledge of some of these things, but you're offering us some very helpful perspective on how the Trump world operates, and frankly, another reason I find your testimony fairly compelling and credible is because a lot of the things you're describing, a lot of the behavior you're describing, is very consistent with what we all see every single day. So it's not a leap for us to arrive in the same place of perspective that you presented. I'm interested in some of the activities around the inaugural committee, the inauguration of the president. There was an article that appeared in ProPublica, it's a watchdog group, about some negotiation on pricing of things at the Trump Hotel, where it looks like the rental that was being quoted was substantially even double what you would expect to pay according to what the market should bear, and so in a sense that the Trump Hotel was upcharging to the inaugural.
Even I couldn't afford to stay there.
Committee, yeah. And so I'm just curious, do you have a sense of whether that kind of a practice is something that is consistent or inconsistent? Is it possible that that kind of upcharging could be done inside a Trump operation?
It did happen, and
gentlemen, Simon.
What I can say to you is I wasn't part of the inaugural committee. I raised a lot of money for the inauguration, but I was not part of it. And there was a lot of things, and that issue is something that's also obviously we've read about in the paper being investigated at the current moment.
Thank you.
Mr. Higgins.
Clay Higgins, Republican from Louisiana, as we continue listening to Michael Cohen answer questions live on Capitol Hill.
Sorry for what your family is going through. I feel for your family. The word tells us clearly that a man's mouth is his destruction and his lips are the snare of his soul. And I see you, a man trapped in that. However, I must tell you that I've arrested several thousand men, and you remind me of many of them, the ones that immediately become humble and remorseful at the time they're actually booked, and while they're incarcerated, they're quite penitent, and then return to their former selves when they're back on the street. So, respectful to your family and what they're going through, I owe you the honesty to tell you that that's my sense of you, good sir. I'm going to give you another opportunity to respond to what you brushed off earlier regarding your own statement during his testimony from C-SPAN notation at 2 hours and 50 seconds in. You stated regarding your credibility that you're being accused of having no credibility, that it is exactly for that reason I spent the last week searching boxes to find the information that I did so that you don't have to take my word for it. I want you to look at the documents and make your own decisions. Now, the documents you're referring to, Mr. Cohen, are the documents that you submitted in your with your testimony today. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Do you believe those documents to be worthy of evidence for this oversight hearing today?
I leave that to you to decide.
And I ask you again, sir, and please don't be incredulous. This is a serious question. Where are those boxes that contain documents worthy of evidence to be presented to Congress, and why have they not been turned over to investigating authorities looking into some of the many criminal activities that you're allegedly cooperating in? Where are these boxes? Who knows of these? Where is this treasure of evidence?
The boxes that I'm referring to were boxes that were in my law office when the FBI entered and seized documents.
Mr. Chairman, I would hope that the investigating authorities have noted what the gentleman had just stated, and that actions be taken for those boxes to be seized and reviewed based upon proper warrants signed by a sitting judge. You noted earlier today, Mr. Cohen, quite incredulously, one of my colleagues asked you regarding the television deal. You expressed wonderment that your predicament could possibly get you on television. It certainly got you on television today, has it not, sir?
Sir, I was on television representing Mr. Trump going back into 2011.
Well, I didn't know who you were until today, really, until the FBI raided your home. Most of Americans didn't know who you were. How many attorneys do you think Mr. Trump has had through the course of his career? Quite a few. I would imagine you're just one that's in a trap right now. And I understand you're trying to get out of it. You're in a bind. But I ask you, good sir, have you discussed film and book deals with your stated current attorney, Mr. Davis, Lanny Davis?
With Mr. Davis?
Yes.
No. But I have been approached by many people who are looking to do book deals, movie deals, and so on. So
the answer to that is yes. An American. But it leads me back to my instinct that compares you to many of the men that I've arrested during the course of my career. Mr. Chairman,
with all due respect, sir,
that our primary hearing to introduce the Oversight Committee, the 116th Congress of the American people, has manifested in the way that it obviously is. This is an attempt to injure our president and lay some sort of soft cornerstone for future impeachment proceedings. This is the full intent of the majority. I yield my remaining 30 seconds to the ranking member.
Mr. Cohen, earlier you said the United States Southern District of New York is not accurate in that statement.
Tim Jordan, the ranking member.
Earlier you said that the United States Southern District of New York Attorney's office, that statement is not accurate. You said it's not a lie. You said it's not accurate. You stand by that?
Yes, I did not want a role in the new administration.
So the court's wrong?
Can I finish, sure. Please? I got exactly the role that I wanted. There is no shame in being personal attorney to the president. I got exactly what I wanted. I asked Mr. Trump for that job, and he gave it to me.
All I'm asking, if I could, and I appreciate it, Mr. Chairman, you're saying that statement from the Southern District of New York attorneys is wrong.
I'm saying I didn't write it, and it's not accurate.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Welch.
Peter Welch, Democrat of Vermont.
One of the most significant events in the last presidential campaign, of course, was the dump of emails stolen from the Democratic National Committee, dumped by WikiLeaks. Mr. Cohen, during your opening statement, which was at the height of the election, you testified you were actually meeting with Donald Trump in July 2016 when Roger Stone happened to call and tell Mr. Trump that he had just spoken to Julian Assange. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. And you said that Mr. Assange told Mr. Trump about an upcoming, quoting your opening statement, quote, massive dump of emails that would damage Hillary Clinton's campaign.
Wow.
So I want to ask you about Roger Stone's phone call to the president. First of all, was that on speakerphone? Is that what you indicated?
Yes. So Mr. Trump has a black speakerphone that sits on his desk.
Right.
He uses it quite often because with all the number of phone calls he gets.
Right. Now, in January of this year, 2019, the New York Times asked President Trump if he ever spoke to Roger Stone about these stolen emails. And President Trump answered, and I quote, "No, I didn't. I never did." Was that statement by President Trump true?
No, it's not accurate.
And can you please describe for us, to the best of your recollection, you were present, exactly what Mr. Stone said to Mr. Trump?
It was a short conversation, and he said, "Mr. Trump, I just want to let you know that I just got off the phone with Julian Assange, and in a couple of days, there's going to be a massive dump of emails that's going to severely hurt the Clinton campaign."
And was Mr. Trump and Mr. Stone aware of where those emails came from?
That I'm not aware of.
Did Mr. Trump ever suggest then or later to call the FBI to report this breach?
He never expressed that to me.
Did the president at that time or ever since, in your knowledge, indicate an awareness that this conduct was wrong?
No.
The reason I ask is because on July 22nd, on the eve of the Democratic Convention, WikiLeaks published, as you know, the 20,000 leaked internal DNC emails. Could your meeting with Mr. Trump have been before that date?
Yes.
So Mr. Trump was aware of the upcoming dump before it actually happened?
Yes.
Right. And is there any record?
Though, sir, I don't know whether he knew or not, and I don't believe he did, what the sum and substance of the dump was going to be, only that there was going to be a dump of emails.
And he was aware of that before the dump occurred, correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. And are there any records that would corroborate the day of this meeting, calendars perhaps?
I'm not in possession, but I believe, again, this is part of the special counsel, and they probably best suited to corroborate that information.
Was anyone else present in the room during the call?
I don't recall for this one. No, sir.
Is there anyone else the committee should talk to about the president's knowledge of the WikiLeaks email dump?
Well, again, when he called, Rona Graf yelled out to Mr. Trump, "Roger's on line one," which was regular practice.
And that's his assistant?
That's his, yes.
All right. And during a news conference on July 27th, 2016, then-candidate Trump publicly appealed to Russia to hack Hillary Clinton's emails and make them public. He stated, and I quote, "Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing." Now, going back to Mr. Stone's phone call to the president, do you recall if Mr. Trump had knowledge of the WikiLeaks dump at the time of his direct appeal to Russia?
I am not.
But the call with Mr. Stone, you believe, was before?
Yes.
This 27th.
Yes, I'm sorry. If you're, I thought you were talking about a different set of documents that got dumped. So I was in Mr. Trump's office, it was either July 18th or 19th. And yes, he went ahead. I don't know if the 35,000 or 30,000 emails was what he was referring to, but he certainly had knowledge.
All right, thank you. Just one last question. Mr. Raskin had been asking you some questions, and one of the things in your answer was that Mr. Pecker expended other monies to protect Mr. Trump. Can you elaborate on what some of those other activities were?
Sure. There was the story about Mr. Trump having a love child with an employee, and actually the husband of that employee works for the company as well. And there was a elevator operator who claims that he overheard the conversation taking place between one of Mr. Trump's other executives and somebody, and he ended up paying like $15,000 in order to buy that story to find out whether it was true or not. And that's just one example of things that David had done over the years. It was the reason why in the recording, when David was looking to become the CEO of Time Magazine, we were concerned about, we'll call it, the treasure trove of documents that had been created over the years, that if he left, somebody could open up the key to a drawer and find all this information. So we were going to look to buy all of those life rights and so on.
Gentleman's time expired. Mr. Norman.
This is live coverage from NPR News of Michael Cohen's testimony before Congress. This is Ralph Norman.
And you're listening to WMNF's live broadcast of the House Oversight and Reform Committee's hearing with Michael Cohen, the president's ex-lawyer, in the witness chair.
Just got caught. And the thing that amazed me is that in your opening statement, which, let me quote, last fall, I pled guilty in federal court to felonies for the benefit of, at the direction of, and in coordination with Individual One. Was that present?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Your crimes were of your own to benefit yourself. Go through all the ones with the real estate, with the banks. On your HELOC loan, you failed to disclose more than $20 million in debt. You failed to disclose $70,000 in monthly payments. On your $14 million line of credit, you failed to disclose that you had drawn on that. So this was all for yourself. This wasn't for the benefit of President Trump. This was to benefit Michael Cohen. So that's my question. Did you just get caught? And you worked for this man for 10 years, Mr. Cohen. You came in here with these he's a con man. He's a cheat. This is the very man that, didn't you wiretap him illegally? Did you not wiretap President Trump without his knowledge?
I did record Mr. Trump in a conversation, yes.
Is that lawyer-client privilege? Is that something that an honest guy would do, an honest lawyer?
I actually never thought that this was going to be happening and that recording even existed. I had forgotten.
But you did it.
Yes, I did.
Have you ever...
I had a reason for doing it.
What was your reason?
Because I knew he wasn't going to pay that money, and David Pecker had already chewed me out on multiple occasions regarding other monies that he expended.
But this is a man that you trusted, you take a bullet for, you secretly recorded. Let me ask you this, Mr. Cohen. Have you legally or illegally recorded other clients?
I have recordings of people, yes.
Legally or illegally?
I believe that they're legal.
Did you tell them?
In New York State, you don't have to do that.
So you didn't tell them?
No, I did not.
Okay.
Sometimes I also use the recordings for contemporaneous note-taking instead of writing it down. I find it easier.
If the shoe were reversed, would you like your trusted lawyer recording you?
I probably would not, no.
No, sir. It's untrustworthy. It's something people just would not do. Now, your bank loans that I just ran down, did you ever default on any of these loans?
No, sir.
So the bank didn't take any loss?
No bank has. I am not in default. I've never filed a bankruptcy. The HELOC you're referring to, I replaced that from a different HELOC. Paid it off. I owe no banks any money.
How about your medallion taxicab? Do you have to sell that?
I'm still... Well, the ones in Chicago, yes, I do have to sell. However, New York, the answer is no, I don't. And the industry is going through a major, major correction because of ride sharing. It's changed a lot of things.
The value of it has.
Yes, sir.
Right. Has the no bank, would the banks make you a loan again based on your record?
Actually, they did. They did. The bank actually redid and they refinanced the entire package.
Currently?
Post this, yes.
Okay. Have they never had to do a loan loss reserve for the projected losses?
I don't know what they did, but it's still the same amount. Well, I didn't get the benefit of it, no, sir.
Most likely they did. I was on an audit committee.
They may have done that, sir, but that's for their own banking, not for me.
No, it's by law. If they suspect you of lying, which you admitted to, if they suspect you of maybe not being able to make a loan payment, they have to have a loan loss reserve that's 125% of what you... If it's $20 million, they have to post in their account $20 million plus. So they get no interest on it. And you know who pays for that? The American public who deals with that bank.
Yes, but, sir, I'm not in default. And I'm current on each and every one of those medallion loans. And I've never owed any money to First Republic Bank. In fact, at the time that I had the HELOC, I had more cash sitting in that same bank.
than, last question. Than the HELOC and my mortgage combined.
Have you ever been to Prague?
I've never been to Prague.
Never have.
I've never been to the Czech Republic.
You'll balance my time.
This is special coverage from NPR News. Next
thank
is
you,
Jackie
Chairman,
Speer,
you,
Democrat
Trump.
From California.
On page 5 of your statement, you say, and I quote, "You need to know that Mr. Trump's personal lawyers reviewed and edited my statement to Congress about the timing of the Moscow Tower negotiations." Who were those attorneys?
Jay Sekulow from the White House?
Yes.
Jay Sekulow, I believe Abby Lowell as well.
And you have a copy of your original statement that you can provide to the committee?
I can try to get that for you.
All right, if you would do that. The letter of intent for the Moscow Tower was in the fall of 2015, correct?
Correct.
Was there an expiration date on that letter of intent?
There was no expiration
date. So it could technically still be in effect today?
Oh, no, it's been terminated.
It has been terminated?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Did Mr. Trump tell you to offer Vladimir Putin a free penthouse?
No, ma'am.
So what
was that? That was Felix Sater. It was a marketing stunt that he spoke about.
So Felix Sater had suggested to you that Mr. Trump offer a penthouse to Mr. Putin?
Yes, because it would certainly drive up the price per square foot. No different than in any condo where they start listing celebrities that live in the property.
In 2016, did you travel to Europe?
Yes.
Did you meet with persons associated with the Moscow Tower project?
No.
It was for personal? Or?
Personal. My daughter was studying at Queen Mary in London.
So you did not meet with any Russians?
No.
There is an elevator tape that has been referenced as a catch-and-kill product. It was evidently of Mr. Trump and a woman, presumably Mrs. Trump, is that correct?
Are we talking about in Moscow or the Trump Tower elevator tape?
There's an elevator tape that went up for auction, ostensibly
yes.
In 2016, is
yes,
that correct?
Yes, I've heard about this.
And who is on that tape?
It's Mr. Trump with Melania.
And what happened in that tape?
The story goes that he struck Melania while in that elevator, because there's a camera inside, which I'm not so sure. Actually, I'm certain it's not true. I've heard about that tape for years. I've known 4 or 5 different people, including folks from AMI, who have
so. But there was claimed, some tape that went up for auction, correct?
I don't believe that auction was real, and I don't believe anybody. I don't believe Mr. Trump ever struck Mrs. Trump, ever. I don't believe it.
And are you aware of anyone purchasing that tape then?
I don't believe it was ever
so you never
purchased.
Saw this tape?
No, ma'am, and I know several people who went to go try to purchase it for catch and kill purpose. It doesn't exist.
All right.
Mr. Trump would never, in my opinion, it's that's not
good
something
to know.
That he
good
has
to know. Is there a love child?
There is not, to the best of my knowledge.
So you would pay off someone to not
it wasn't
report.
Me, ma'am. It was AMI. It was David Pecker.
So he paid off someone about a love child that doesn't exist?
Correct. It was about $15,000.
Okay. How many times did Mr. Trump ask you to threaten an individual or entity on his behalf?
Quite a few times.
50 times?
More.
100 times?
More.
200 times?
More.
500 times?
Probably. Over the 10 years?
Over the 10 years, he
sure.
asked you...
And when you say threaten, I'm talking with litigation or an argument with...
intimidation.
A nasty reporter that is writing an article.
What do you know about... let's go to your tapes. You said there's probably 100 tapes?
Voice recordings.
And will you make them available to the committee?
If you would really like them.
Did Mr. Trump take conversations?
Don't you have to gavel that, sir?
We would.
Sorry.
Did Mr. Trump tape any conversations?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Were you involved in the $25 million settlement to Trump University?
I had a role in that, yes.
Who paid the settlement?
I believe it was Mr. Trump.
I don't know the answer to that.
You don't know the answer, but you were involved in the
Yes, in a different aspect.
There's some reference to a businessman in Kansas being involved in that. Are you familiar with that?
I'm not familiar with that, no.
All right. Finally, near my 13 seconds left, what do you want your children to know?
That I'm sorry for everything, and I'm sorry for the pain that I've caused them. And I wish I can go back in time.
Thank you. I yield back.
Young lady's time has expired.
This is live coverage from Capitol Hill. This is Elijah Cummings, the chair.
So that you can plan, properly plan. There's a vote apparently coming up in about 10 to 20 minutes. And what we will do is we will recess and we will come back, listen up, 30 minutes after the last vote begins. Got that? Not it ends. 30 minutes after it begins, and we'll do that promptly. All right? All right, Ms. Miller.
I am very disappointed to have you in front of this committee today.
This is Carol Miller, quite Republican frankly, of West Virginia.
This isn't the reason the people of West Virginia sent me to Congress. I find this hearing not in the best interest of the American people. This is another political game with the sole purpose of discrediting the president. If it was not already obvious, there are members here with a singular goal in Congress, to impeach President Trump. To achieve this goal, they will waste not only precious taxpayer dollars, but also time in this committee and Congress as a whole. In fact, they will go so far as to bring a convicted felon in front of our committee. We are supposed to take what you say, Mr. Cohen, at this time about President Trump as the truth. But you're about to go to prison for lying. How can we believe anything you say? The answer is, we can't. This begs the question, why are those in the majority holding this hearing? I am appalled. We could be focused on actual issues that are facing America, like border security, neonatal abstinence syndrome, or improving our nation's crumbling infrastructure. Instead, the Democrats are trying to grasp at straws. Let's talk about this witness. From his sentencing hearing in the Southern District of New York, Judge Pauley stated, Mr. Cohen pled guilty to a veritable smorgasbord of fraudulent conduct. Willful tax evasion, making false statements to a financial institution, illegal campaign contributions, and making false statements to Congress. Each of the crimes involved deception, and each appears to have been motivated by personal greed and ambition. This is who we have in front of us today in our committee. Someone who is about to be sent to prison for 3 years for evading his taxes, deceiving a financial institution, lying to Congress, among other counts. One of the most appalling facts about this hearing is that Mr. Cohen has used his experiences with President Trump both before and after he was elected for his own greed and profit. I'd like some yes or no answers. Isn't it true you tried to sell a book about your time with President Trump entitled Trump Revolution, From the Tower to the White House, Understanding Donald J. Trump?
Yes, that happened early on when I was still even part, I believe, of the RNC.
And this book deal, which you had with Hatchet Books, was worth around $500,000, isn't that correct?
No, more, ma'am.
How much more?
I think it was about $750,000.
Wow. Mr. Cohen...
I did turn it down.
Given that you continue to profit from publicly discussing your time with Mr. Trump, I worry that this committee hearing the majority has given you will only serve as a platform for you to continue to lie and sensationalize and exaggerate wherever it suits you. Do you plan to pursue another book deal about your experiences?
Yes.
I would presume this book would be a little different than your latest pitch, but your new angle might please some new fans. Anything to sell books. Mr. Chairman, We've canceled hearings on child separation and on other issues that are close to my heart for this media circus. What a waste of time and money. For a man who has gladly exploited the name of the president to promote his own name and fill his own pockets, it pains me that we are sitting here adding another chapter to his book. Thank you, and I yield the remainder of my time to Mr. Jordan.
I thank the gentlelady for yielding. Earlier, Mr. Cohen, the gentlelady from California talked about this this tape.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Earlier, the gentlelady from California talked about this tape, this elevator tape that you said does not exist.
That's correct. I do not believe it exists.
But is it also your testimony that the Trump team was willing to pay to make sure a story about a non-existent tape never became public?
No, sir. That's not what I said.
They were willing to stop a false tape?
We learned that this tape was potentially on the market and that it existed. And so what we did is exactly what we did with all the other catch and kill. We looked for it. And if, in fact, that it did exist, we would have tried to stop it. That's what I would have done.
False tape.
But it's a false tape. I've never...
Got it.
Heard it, and I can assure you one thing about Mr. Trump. Many things, he would never, ever do something like that. I don't see it.
Ms. Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Cohen, I'd like to ask you more about the details of the $130,000 payment you made to Stephanie Clifford.
This is Robin Kelly, a Democrat of Illinois. Special coverage for NPR News.
Purchaser silenced shortly before the 2016 elections. First, according to documents filed by federal prosecutors in New York, you created a shell company called Essential Consultants, LLC. Is that correct?
It's correct.
And you created this company for the purpose of making the payment to Ms. Clifford. Is that correct?
Amongst other things, yes.
You then used a home equity line of credit to fund the account in the name of Essential Consultants, LLC. Is that correct?
That's correct.
You then wired $130,000 to the attorney representing Ms. Clifford at that time and wrote in the memo field for the wire the word, quote, retainer. Is that correct?
Correct.
Can you tell us why you decided to use this complicated process to make this payment?
Well, starting an LLC is not a sophisticated means. LLC, you call up a company, you pay for it, and they open it for you. And the reason that I used the home equity line of credit as opposed to cash that I had in the same exact bank was I didn't want my wife to know about it because she handles all of the banking. And I didn't want her coming to me and asking me what was the $130,000 for. And then I was going to be able to move money from one account to the other and to pay it off because I didn't want to have to explain to her what that payment was about. I sent it to the IOLA account, the interest on a lawyer's account, to Keith Davidson, California, Ms. Daniels' attorney. He would hold it in escrow until such time as I received the executed NDA, non-disclosure agreement.
Did Mr. Trump know you were going through this process to hide the payment?
Yes.
Why not just use Mr. Trump's personal or company bank account to make the payment? Why was the distraction so important besides you not wanting your wife to know?
What his concern was that there would be a check that has his very distinct signature onto it. And even after she cashed the check, all you need to do is make a photocopy of it, and it's kind of proof positive on exactly what took place. So here, the goal was to keep him far away from it as possible.
Can anyone corroborate what you have shared with us?
Absolutely.
And that is?
Keith Davidson, Alan Weisselberg, President Trump.
Okay. Now let's talk about the reimbursement. According to federal prosecutors, and I quote, after the election, Cohen sought reimbursement for election-related expenses, including the $130,000 payment. Prosecutors stated that you, and I quote, presented an executive of the company with a copy of a bank statement reflecting the $130,000 wire transfer. Is that accurate?
That is accurate.
Do you still have a copy of that bank statement?
Yes, it's actually made part of the exhibit.
Okay, so you will provide it to the committee?
Yes, ma'am.
According to federal prosecutors, executives at the company then, and I quote, agreed to reimburse Cohen by adding $130,000 and $50,000, grossing up that amount to $360,000 for tax.
You've been listening to WMNF's live coverage of the House Oversight and Reform Committee's hearing with Michael Cohen testifying. We are about to return to normal programming. You will be, we're going to return to the NPR News at the top of the hour, and we'll be followed that by It's the Music, the All Souls edition of It's the Music this afternoon with Jen Hollowell in for Scott Elliott. We anticipate returning to normal programming tomorrow, and I'm very, very certain that there will be an opportunity to have a conversation about this afternoon's events and about this afternoon's hearing, and also about the president being overseas in Hanoi. We'll know a lot more about what's been going on over in Hanoi. You are listening to WMNF. This is 88.5 WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Clearwater, Mulberry, and Bartow.